The thing about augmented and virtual reality is that we've had these technologies for, I think, over a decade at this point. And while the use cases that, you know, my panelists are saying here are very relevant, we still have a long, long way off before they're integrated into what we think of as the metaverse. So the metaverse today, you know, you have a lot of companies here, you know, in the UAE and all across the world that are saying they're building individual metaverses, right? So it's a closed virtual or augmented reality space. So technically, that's not the metaverse. But then how powerful are the use cases day to day? And then how accessible is it for people to actually onboard? Because, you know, a truck driver in the developing world is not going to use virtual reality. First of all, it's far too expensive. Second of all, the accessibility and the onboarding to that technology is very, very difficult. I mean, what is it going to do to enhance his or her life, in essence?
Hey everyone, welcome to MetaMind 3.0 podcast, a meeting of minds where we speak to industry specialists and brand experimentalists to uncover, demystify, and understand Web3 and the metaverse, and answer the question, so what? Why should we as people and brands pay attention to the developments and what are the real world applications for us as individuals, businesses, and communities? I'm your host, Brandon Buzatil, and this is my journey into Web3 and the metaverse. Welcome aboard.
Hey guys, welcome back to the MetaMind 3.0 podcast. If you're anything like me, I've been waist deep in Web3 content out there, of which there is plenty. What's made it a little easier is that we've been organizing events focused around Web3 and the metaverse. So a lot of content has been falling into my lap. This is a part one of two from one of our past events. The theme was technologies that enable the metaverse. In this half, we hear from our panelists about some of the pillars in the metaverse. We take a look under the hood of 3D modeling and the mathematics behind the metaverse, as well as talk a bit about governance and protocols in this new Web3 space. There's also some discussion where we're still lacking in the metaverse at the moment, which is a great thing to pay attention to if you're a business professional looking for a niche to improve and a way to get your foot in the door. Make sure you check out part two as well and check the show notes for a chapter by chapter breakdown of what's covered in this episode, where I'll also drop some metaverse platforms that our panelists mentioned in the show notes as well. Enjoy.
We have a gentleman, he's an associate business director at Publicis Group. His expertise is Web3, blockchain, metaverse, cryptos, and NFTs. And with over 8 years of experience, he's worked in media planning, performance marketing, and data science consulting. Please welcome to the stage, George. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you before you take a seat?
So my name is George Sheevy. I work at Publicis Group. For those of you that don't know Publicis Group, we're about 90,000 employees in over 100 countries. We do anything from digital transformation to advertising. Personally, in the region, based in Dubai, I focus on platforms, partnerships, and privacy. So platforms being building Web3 ecosystems, partnerships being modular and composable commerce, and then privacy being privacy SaaS. That's pretty much it.
Perfect. Thank you so much. We're super excited to have you here. Now, the next gentleman I want to bring up onto the stage is a system engineering chief engineer at RTA, and he's on a mission to mathematize a spectrum of management and engineering topics to help businesses realize their targeted capitalization. His expertise is in information management, engineering, and system governance. Now, let me see if I can get this. His expertise is also integrability, interoperability, composability, and systems and IT enablers. I've been practicing that. You guys can give me a round of applause. Lots of abilities. Please welcome to the stage, Walid. Tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Yusa. That's amazing. I'm Walid. What I do is I'm a mechanical engineer who grew an unexplained and unparalleled love for numbers. And I do a lot of nerdy stuff with just normal-looking, beautiful, innocent things that we look in our world. So I take a very complex system or something that is beautiful aesthetically, and I try and predict what happens to it and model it and take informed decision from what happens behind that. Right.
Amazing. Thanks. Thank you so much. We're super excited to get chatting to you tonight. But before we do that, let's bring up our third specialist. He's the co-founder and CEO of AVR Hub, and his expertise is AV, VR, and mixed reality after 12 years of managing designs and architects for multi-billion dollar corporates in the UAE. He's decided to grow his career by combining technology with design. Please welcome Mikhail. Now, Mikhail, I'm going to ask you the same question. Tell us a little bit about you.
First of all, thank you, everyone, for being here. It's a great pleasure to be with other MetaMinds from the space. My name is Raed Mikhail. I'm the CEO and founder of AVR Hub. AVR stands for Augmented Virtual Reality. We help companies and corporates to leverage from extended reality solutions. We're going to get into the details of what's extended reality now in a second. Thank you, everyone.
Amazing. Thank you. But I think we're going to start today off with one big question that I think has been on a lot of people's minds. What is the metaverse? And we'll start with you, George.
Sure. So the metaverse, at least to me, is this interoperable, persistent, synchronous space or place that doesn't exist yet, I guess. That's probably the easiest way of putting it.
That's really true what George just said. And if you think of it, we've all been using or hearing about a lot of hype words and buzzwords and blockchain and cryptocurrency and virtual reality, which we're going to learn a lot about today. I believe the metaverse could be described as the convergence of these technologies together to offer us an inevitable path of our evolution as humans into a lot of ventures where impossible things could be done quite easily in a virtual controlled world.
Well, the metaverse for me, I've said this once before, it's the immersive version of the internet, open for everyone to use and created by everyone, created basically by people. And what do I mean by immersive version of the internet? It's basically similar to the internet that we use today, but with more technologies put together that tap onto our senses, like extended reality and so on and so on.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Well, we actually spoke before coming here today and we were just discussing what we should speak about, what the best way to handle this big topic was. And we spoke about the 8 pillars that kind of make up the metaverse. And it was really interesting to hear that every one of you had a different 8 pillars, which just showed how new everything is getting started and that we're kind of making history, writing the books, and nothing's 100% solidified yet. But we kind of summed it up into a few really nice topics and each have a nice subtopics that we can get into. Waleed, we'll start with you. We're going to talk about the extended reality. What does that mean?
A lot of people confuse extended reality with virtual reality or augmented reality. Augmented reality, let me explain this in a very quick way. Augmented reality is when you see reality and you see augmented information into the reality using your mobile phone or HoloLens, for example, mixed reality device. And there are so many devices, basically. I'm not going to go into that. Let's go into virtual reality. Virtual reality, when you see a full immersive visuals, basically like any VR headset, this falls under extended reality. Those are the two major technologies that currently we're using. However, there are other technologies that tap into our senses to give us the feeling that we are present in that digital space. There is a company or a group they called Future Interface Group. They have invented an extension of the VR device where it gives you the feeling of a kiss, for example. It gives you a feeling if you're wearing the VR device and you're riding a motorbike in a game, it gives you the feeling of the air hitting your face. So this falls also into extended reality. So extended reality is a whole bunch of technologies that all touch into our senses to give us that feeling that we are already there.
Now, I just have a very small question just in terms of that. We know that Pokemon Go game, would that be altered reality because you can kind of like see things?
Pokemon Go is an augmented reality game.
Then the VR set would be virtual reality.
Virtual reality.
Now, with the extended reality, would you have to wear anything? Would anything else
No,
have
extended
to be worn?
Reality is a term that describes all those technologies together.
Okay.
So VR or AR, there are under, or mixed reality, MR, there are under extended reality.
Okay.
So it's an extension of reality, basically.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Would you like to speak about that, or we can go into content, computer vision?
It's a broad topic that involves a lot of things under it, and think it this way. So you've mentioned before Pokemingo as well, which is and couldn't be described better by Raed. That's an augmented reality where you kind of have objects augmented in reality. And even Pokemon Go is like a predecessor of what AR would look like today or now defined. So Pokemon Go is like having a very solid object, not much of calculations done there, just plant it into the image in your phone or the camera that you see. But when we think of what computer vision can offer in the metaverse, that's we can really stretch our minds a bit and think of what happens when you're looking at us now. For example, Tuesday is interviewing and you guys are engaging with your field of vision being at Tuesday. And while I see Tuesday, for example, but my brain is building a lot of information and complementing the image I'm seeing. And that way, actually, I could be inventing stuff. I could be building things that do not exist. But once I do look at it, it confirms reality to me. And that is something that computer vision now, and AI models, specifically the newer GPT-3 OpenAI, is a huge name that's been working on a lot of new technologies and new models that would allow basically AIs to function a bit of like our brains. So we don't need to render a whole reality, but rather we need to make you believe that this is reality enough in the way that our brains work. And computer vision would allow us to have a very smooth feeling about what we perceive around us. So it's a really big feel, and it's a stretch to us to think what could happen. And that's just one aspect of what computer vision can really have. Another one, which I think Raed even would be better than me talking about, is the wave lights and waveguides, where you can basically get reality from you to build it back into your
Well, computer vision, consider it like an eye, like our eyes and the brain. The technology right now that we have it in our mobile, especially in iPhones, the new iPhones, we have a LiDAR technology. It calculates the depth of each object, and the AI understand what is this object. So if I'm pointing at a human, it will detect that there's a human and standing in a certain, like, a couple of centimeters away from me. It can detect how many centimeters exactly he's standing. And this is where computer vision is a technology that's really used in the metaverse. It's one of the core in augmented reality. And by the way, the metaverse is going to be driven by augmented reality. Why augmented reality, not virtual reality or any other extended reality technology? Because we can wear the glasses, for example, like Google AR glasses, which we're going to play a video in a couple of minutes. I can wear the glasses and I can drive my car. I can see augmented information. The glasses will detect that there's a building in front of me or there's a human in front of me, and then it will augment information into it, not VR. VR, I won't be able to see reality. And this is where computer vision comes in handy, because I still need to see reality, and I need to see, for example, if I'm going to detect your face. We have this option on Facebook right now. Once you post a picture, it will automatically detect your face, and it'll give, do you want to tag this person? This is a computer, a pure example of computer vision, and it's getting better and better by the second.
Wow, okay, that is something that I really didn't know, and that's super exciting that that's going to be a part, or like you said, the main part, because in terms of VR, you actually need to wear a headset and you're just completely submerged in, where in terms of computer vision, you can function in the real world and be part of the metaverse at the same time, which is super exciting. I think that leads us into 3D vision.
It's not 3D vision, it's 3D modeling. 3D modeling is when you create a replica of a physical item to the virtual world. So, for example, if we have a car, an existing car, or if we have a human, we can create an avatar from this human. This is when we create a 3D model from the original. Now we can see, and I believe Waleed can speak about Omniverse. It's a new platform for enabling designers from all around the world to create those 3D models in real-time render. Like, for example, factories now. You build a replica of a factory in a virtual world, and you connect it to the virtual world. And this is where you have a 3D model of an existing object or existing anything, basically, to the world. And they're on a mission to create a twin of the full Earth. And we're going to see that soon.
I mean, if you were to look at what NVIDIA is doing, you would immediately try and say, like, where have I been? Apparently, like, yeah, it's like these big giant tech companies, they're not wasting the money, definitely. And by taking certain informed strategic investments along their timeline, you could see where this is targeted. You can see immediately that these expect a lot of capitalization over these investments. And what NVIDIA is doing is the Omniverse, and it is a real-world virtual reality where people, creators, designers from around the globe can work parallelly on the same object. It could be rendered immediately for them, and it could have the same type of interaction. So if I'm, for example, creating this door of that room and then comes in Raed and he wants to add the textures for it, if I left it this way, Raed will find it this way. No one can change it unless he's got the right permissions to do so. If I'm just the texture guy, then no one will be allowed to do that except me, for example. And what this... Exactly. And they are doing that through a multiple software suite that together they kind of culminate what the Omniverse is. And this is exactly one of the pillars needed to build... I would rather say one of the technologies needed to build a real working consensus will happen over a multiverse, a metaverse rather. And then what can this offer later is a method for these guys to keep developing the same world that has been created. Version control over reality as well, which is very important. Control of physics, control of their laws of that world. So yeah, this is the Omniverse. Pretty much interesting to see.
Now, it seems like the Web 2 has kind of, you know, created the global world where it's kind of brought everybody together and allowed people from all over the world to work together. This seems like it's bringing people even closer to work together. Do you think that it's going to impact? Because people working in the same area, they'll be able to use this as well. Do you think that what will happen to workplaces and... Because it'll be a good thing for internationally, but like in the same city, what impact do you feel like that would have?
Well, in my opinion, it's going to serve a lot of sectors. It's not about socializing only. It's not about just meeting people. It will serve the scientists a lot because there, for example, one of the examples that they mentioned in their keynote speaking of the CEO of Omniverse, that the speculation of the weather, how the weather is going to be from the replica that they're gonna build. That's one option. BMW, for example, they're doing a replica of their factory to define if there's any error in real time, they will be able to see it in the virtual replica. So it will serve a lot of sectors, including the health sector, education, for example. They will be able, students, this is a product that we have as well. The students can go into virtual labs, for example, chemistry lab, where they can do experiments that they can't do in real life. Because in real life, it would be dangerous for them to mix two dangerous chemicals, but in virtual space they can use their creativity. They can go above and beyond with their implementation on how to mix two chemicals together or put electricity with chemical. So it will serve a lot of sectors. One thing to add about Omniverse is going to be like the internet. We have HTML for the internet. Omniverse, they're using something called USD, Universal Scene. We can Google it after this. Yeah, so this is going to be some...
It's their own proprietary extension.
Exactly. This is going to be like a 3D, universal 3D instead of HTML that everyone will be using later on. So instead of www.html something, then we're gonna enter a virtual world. Instead of going to a regular website, it's going to be more immersive, and we're going to walk into the website.
Wow. I'm excited and scared at the same time. So would you like to add anything?
Yeah,
to...
sure. So I'm a bit more contrarian than the two gentlemen here. I think virtual reality and augmented reality are still a long way off. And I'll just do a quick dipstick. How many people actually use virtual reality and augmented reality in their day-to-day lives?
got one hand.
I got one hand. So I think that points out, I got half a hand over here. So one and a half hands over here. So the thing about augmented and virtual reality is that we've had these technologies for, I think, over a decade at this point. And while the use cases that, you know, my panelists are saying here are very relevant, we still have a long, long way off before they're integrated into what we think of as the metaverse. So the metaverse today, you know, you have a lot of companies here, you know, in the UAE and all across the world that are saying they're building individual metaverses, right? So Ra'ed spoke about factories. I mean, factories are very interesting, but that's not the metaverse, because a competitor to BMW, let's say, cannot enter that world. So it's a closed virtual or augmented reality space. So technically, that's not the metaverse. Neither is it, you know, if, I don't know if the RTA is building something, but like if the RTA were to grant a competitor infrastructure board, you know, their proprietary documentation, does that work? Probably not. So my thing with virtual and augmented reality, I take a more contrarian view of this, is that they're incredible technologies, but then how powerful are the use cases day to day? And then how accessible is it for people to actually onboard? Because, you know, we were discussing, I think I was discussing with Ben earlier, is that, you know, a truck driver in the developing world is not going to use virtual reality, because first of all, it's far too expensive. Second of all, the accessibility and the onboarding to that technology is very, very difficult. I mean, what is it going to do to enhance his or her life, in essence? So I take a bit more contrarian. I know it's a, you know.
Well, may I?
Yeah, go for it.
So the idea, Facebook are working on their AR glasses. Google has just announced 3 weeks ago their AR glasses teaser. Apple, they're working on their AR glasses. So in a year or a year and a half, we're going to see a lot of AR glasses coming to use. So once we have the AR glasses, people will shift from using their mobile phones to AR glasses, because it's going to be more practical. More use. You've seen the solution that they're providing.
But it's now, it's just a video.
Yeah, just a video. Yeah, but what we do, for example, when it comes to virtual reality trainings, now we're working on multiple trainings. You can't achieve in real life, but you can achieve it with virtual reality. I'm not saying that virtual reality and augmented reality at the moment are in use in the metaverse, because there is no such thing called metaverse till now, because we can't see a lot of collaboration happening between the semi-alike metaverses, but we still don't have. A full metaverse. As I said, the metaverse is the immersive version of the internet with a combination of a lot of novel technologies put together to reach to that point. But still, we're just scratching the surface with those technologies.
It's something that I want to take it from what Ra'ed just stopped there. And given what I'm a true believer that we don't have enough even competency and capabilities to build, and not the technical ones, definitely the business-driven and the alignment with global standardization and our sustainable development goals of our planet. They are not there yet. The alignment with these are not there to connect these metaverses together. They actually exist. These metaverses exist. There are a couple of different sort of bubble metaverses, but there is no kind of a global agreement on what the metaverse should be, should serve, or should look like, right? And one thing that is going to be done, and there is in any new field rising, in any new science, in any human venture that we see in our history, there are proponents and detractors always, and both help together by standing their own opinions to build that technology further. And what George has highlighted is actually very true. There is a long road towards real AR and VR. Even like the things that we believe is AR, it still lacks a lot of like projections and like a lot of equations even can't be solved yet with the current architectures of our GPUs. One thing that is going to happen, and we're definitely going to see that, is a convergence of a couple of technologies, that being hardware architecture, machine learning, and specifically, I don't want to say AI, is actually, there are certain problems with machine learning and blockchain, exactly. And what's happening if we looked at that graph there? Are we familiar with Moore's Law? And do we know? Yeah, fantastic. And basically, in our human license, we started transistors and circuits that can decide for us, take decisions, small, yes or no, right? And by yes or no, we can build bigger circuits that call people, that change the frequencies of your phone when you switch in between targets and think for us and build vision. And so that started back early at the perceptron, right? And then the perceptron was the early AI model. It's not really an AI even, but it is the birth of machine learning. It's the birth of everything that we know. And if we looked at that graph, basically here is the processing compute power. And this is expressed in something called petaflops these days. And that's basically, think of it, it's the amount of processing unit for a net of an AI over the day. That would be equal to 10 to the power of 20 processing step a day. This is a huge number. This is a number more than the elements, the atoms of our Earth. So this is a huge, this is big. And if we looked at what happens with these requirements, so we see the models here starting small and cozy, and then suddenly they double every 2 years. And that's basically Moore's law, and we kind of like looked at that here, and that was fantastic. And then suddenly what happened is that since 2012, the fantastic phenomena happened. Suddenly, technologies, especially NVIDIA, started producing something called the Tesla architecture for the GPUs. And what happened is that that allowed models like AlexNet, VGG. We use VGG, by the way, when you use your phone, for example, to take pictures and kind of identify what these objects are. And then ResNet. But what happens here is the computation power is doubled every 3.4 months. This here is a trajectory up until AlphaGo Zero at the year of release. And AlphaGo Zero beat the world champion in Go game, which is a very complex game to play. What we see here is an exponential increase, and it's a bit linear now, but it is actually going exponentially now. And at that point, we reach what we call an artificial superintelligence. And this is a model where it can learn by itself and grow conscious in a way, and that would allow things to happen in the metaverse that we can't think of at the moment, like a decentralized government to exist, to define the rules, to make sure that we're happy with these rules together, a completely bot android, in a way, being to confirm that we're all happy with that existence. And something that we need to defend us in the metaverse, your data could be leaked as we connect to public Wi-Fi, for example, but also as you go on crypto exchanges, or we hear all every day of hacks and botnets. These AIs would be defending us already. There is a wonderful model that we've been seeing, and it's a botnet model for the metaverse. It is basically a computerized program that knows how to defend hackers, and it learns by its own and upgrades the security of the metaverse. These things here, the doubling periods of compute, the new Moore's law, or should it be this way, is actually what is going to happen in the metaverse. This will allow the metaverse to live and to outlive our current understanding of what it could grow to be. I remember Tesla when he invented the transistors at first, and then he like built boats to walk on water. It was like a fantastic experiment for a show of physics. And then years after that, people capitalized and built phones and built TVs and built stuff that we all use today, taken for granted. And that what happens back then, it's like, all right, that's a good game. That's a beautiful game of boats that Tesla can show us with his Tesla towers and electricity shows. But today, it's a completely different game. We all take these things for granted. But back then when they started, both the proponents and detractors built them together piece by piece into what we take them now for granted. That's what I expect to see. It's an inevitable human evolution path to what the metaverse could grow to be.
Now, you spoke about security, and I think that that's a nice little segue to governance, standardization, and security.
So governance in terms of protocols of the metaverse, right? Because today when you think about the metaverse has to be what's called interoperable. So today if you enter one world, go to the other, you should be able to take all of your data, all of your items, all of your coins or money or whatever it is, right? Into another world or onto another platform. Now, today, I find that very difficult because I highly doubt Disney is going to allow you to take all of that into Paramount, for instance, and vice versa, right? Or Paramount into Warner Brothers. Sorry, Warner Brothers, I think, is owned now by Disney, so that's moot. But you see what I mean is that the IP, the legal infrastructure is still not there. Plus, I don't think that these Web 2 or Web 1 conglomerates are going to allow that. So then you need something.
Can I just ask, when you say taking into taking the IP into, are you, in my mind, I've got a little backpack with all my Disney things and I want to go visit, you know, Paramount in the metaverse and I need to leave my bag at the door or what?
Yeah. So technically, if today you have a backpack, you own the backpack, but you don't own the IP on the backpack, if that makes sense. So if Mickey Mouse is on the backpack, you don't own Mickey Mouse. I mean, I don't want to own Mickey Mouse, but in terms of like the IP
He's
and copyright.
He's told me otherwise. Yeah,
in terms of the IP and copyright, you should be able to take it wherever you go. So today, everyone is probably familiar with Bored Ape Yacht Club. Bored Ape Yacht Club as an NFT is very interesting because that could be the framework for the metaverse or at least IP in the metaverse because it's open IP. You can take it wherever you want and you own it. You own the actual IP. So in terms of governance protocols, someone or a board or an independent, nonpartisan, I guess, system is going to need to create kind of the framework for all of this. Because if we're talking about the metaverse, again, who's going to create, who is going to allow you to do all of that? I highly doubt any of these companies will allow you to go from one to the other. That's why when all these companies come out and they say, well, we're building a metaverse, they're really not. They're just building closed virtual worlds for whatever purpose, you know, they need to use.